Hi, I'm Daniel Raskin, your host of Telekinesis, here with my co-host, Mark Johnson. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Daniel. Super pumped for today. We got an awesome guest for everybody.
Yes, we do. So it's our sixth episode, and we've warmed up enough now where we feel comfortable and brave enough to interview Nima Negabon.
This is my world premiere. You got me.
Wow. This is your first. Do you not listen to podcasts on a regular basis?
My wife is my podcast machine. It's my first pod. I mean, I listen to podcasts. I'm not, out of touch, but I mean, I've never been on a podcast. Never.
Ah.
Well, not as media savvy as you guys, where I just make podcasts and, you know, bandy them about. You probably have secret podcasts, but, this is my humble beginnings into the world of podcast. This my dream has come true.
Well, welcome.
I think you have a bright future in the podcasting realm, Nima. But no, we're really thankful that you could take some time out of the day. Obviously, we know you're super busy driving product stuff forward, and just appreciate you taking the time to sit with us today.
Yeah, and so Nima, maybe to dig in, and our goal here is to bring up every kind of emotion for you. I want to get you to the point.
Yeah,
of,
really. Let's do
laughing,
it.
Crying, all that kind of stuff. So if you go all the way back to your beginnings with GPU powered infrastructure, where did it all start? How did you even get into this space and thinking about what was going on in this realm?
I mean, it all started like in 08, I was a part of this web startup called Digital Sports. And, basically, long story short, it flamed out in 08 when everything else flamed out. And so, I had gotten really into futures trading and just finance in general. My cousin, was a relatively well off person. I asked him for $100,000 loan, where basically, I'd pay him every month a couple thousand, but then I would use that $100,000 to basically trade on margin, all these futures contracts every day. And basically I'd close my book. My book would be flat at the end of the day. I wouldn't hold anything, but I'd trade algorithmically all day. And then trade a lot of money because you get huge leverage. For every $500, you get to trade a $50,000 contract. So it's a huge multiple. Anyways, started doing that and, realized that I, need a lot of compute power, need to compute some analytics, some reports for myself to understand correlations and to feed my algorithms. And so I was using EC2. I was storing my tick data in Cassandra, and I was spending a lot of my money because when everything's so stressful, it takes a lot of, you become very cheap. I don't know what better way to say it, but I was like, I'm just giving X amount of thousands of dollars to Amazon every month. Like, how do I bring this down? So I got into GPUs because my apartment didn't charge for electricity. So I bought GPUs, I put them in my apartment. I learned about superlatives of the GPU as a computing device. Eventually, my days as a, hedge fund wannabe kind of ended, and I decided this is too stressful and I'm not making that great of a living, for the stress. So, Amit, who's, obviously part of Connecticut too, had this, really great contract where he had, kind of set himself up as the boutique intelligence, geospatial, consulting company for this, innovative program. So I came there, really as a DevOps guy, a Cassandra guy, a big data guy, quote unquote, when that was kind of still meant something, or I don't know, probably didn't mean anything then either. I was basically someone that knew Cassandra, and there wasn't that many people, at the time that knew that in 09, 010. So came in there, started to see the problems, and said, hey, Amit, we could probably try to do something with the GPU here. Amit owned the map, the map product and the map app application. So he said, if you can put something together I'll integrate a version of my map application to your server, your database, right? And we'll just do geospatial, and we'll relate geospatial to documents, and let's see if, you know, this program guy, you know, the manager gets excited. We did that. We got very excited. We got a lot of, you know, essentially, you know, kind of FTEs, like, you know, we got full-time equivalents to do integration with the prototype into the program, and with the profit that those folks generated, we poured that back into the product. And so, you know, over time, we, you know, became much more ambitious to the point now where, you know, we decided to become, a full, you know, platform. But it started from, you know, pretty humble beginning.
It sounds like what you were going through in 2008 is what a lot of people more recently have been doing with, like, cryptocurrencies. You know, the idea of compute power and building these homegrown systems in their apartments that are generating heat but giving them massive parallel compute.
Yeah, I mean, it's similar. I mean, if I was smart, I would have just done that in 2010. I mean, we had so many folks, like, even like, because we had a ton of GPUs in 2011, 2012, and people were like, just let's do Bitcoin when we're not, like, using, you know, using the hardware to run or to compile. And I was like, no, that's you know, whatever, not within the, I don't know why. I mean, but we should have done that. That would have made a lot of money for the company. But yeah, it's very similar.
Yeah, that's crazy. And so the whole idea then is, as you guys started exploring GPUs around more location-based stuff, you realized there was a whole opportunity around data and kind of entering into that foray and just really coming up with something different, sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, the same things that were giving people problems then with more traditional methods, you know, hold true now. I mean, if data is streaming, you know, a lot of traditional methods have a lot of problem having good performance. If data has a workload, if data is highly cardinal, meaning there's, like, a lot of unique values, it's not something that, you know, I can, you know, put into buckets easily. If I did, I'd have a billion, you know, or many billion buckets. Then, you know, the traditional methods start to fall down. I mean, basically, you know, for the past 30, 40 years, people just weren't even trying to do these kind of analytics because it was just, you know, seemed so, you know, out there or, you know, unreasonable from a compute perspective and a hardware perspective. So, you know, now that people are getting more adventurous, you know, it's a good opportunity for us.
Right. And so what does that mean to you now? Because you're, you know, on the one hand, you started out looking at this from a very technical side. Over the years, you've had exposure to all these different industries. To you, when you're building the architecture for the data-powered business, what does that really mean to you in terms of if you think about kind of the your aspirations about what this means across multiple industries?
I mean, I think that, you know, we're kind of at the end of the wave of, like, these, you know, advanced bespoke systems. And I think that, you know, the data gravity phenomenon is a real thing. And I think that, like, what it means to be a database or a data platform is going to radically change over the next 5 years, because as more and more stuff needs to be housed closer and closer to the data, or needs to be able to leverage processing a lot of data to be, you know, of worth or be of operational integrity, it's going to all gravitate towards the database. So I think the idea of the database being this kind of ho-hum standalone thing that gets SQL and, you know, returns back, you know, comma separated records is going to be changing from that to something where it's kind of like an all-seeing, all-monitoring, you know, all-doing process orchestration system, data processing platform, you know, visualization engine, because fundamentally that data gravity, you know, force, you know, is pulling, you know, applications closer and closer back to the database.
And at what point did you guys kind of realize this convergence was happening? Because what I hear you saying is, if you think of across geospatial and the whole piece of more location-based data being infused into enterprises, if you think about kind of the traditional database groups, BI groups, machine learning groups. There's essentially this convergence of capabilities that you're talking about. And when did you see that happening, and how have you seen that happening?
I mean, you see it happening. I mean, you definitely see it happening just based on the fact of the use cases, right? I mean, the use cases that you're seeing. I mean, I first saw it happen, or I first got it, like in 2010, when, you know, I did a geospatial query, and those queries then related to documents, or they related to entities that related to documents. And I figured out, oh, okay, like, you know, space and time is a really good set of correlated dimensions that you can connect data through. And that, you know, connecting data, you know, means that you need to have is a powerful thing. But you also means you need to have a platform that can kind of do it all, and also show the connections in a meaningful way. I had that kind of moment back then. I mean, as far as seeing it, you know, take off, you know, I'm seeing it, but, you know, it's definitely picked up more in the past year, you know, where like on the ad tech side, you know, ad tech after ad tech is like doing location stuff now. You know, you're starting to see it a little bit on fintech. You know, you're seeing verticals that are traditionally, you know, wanting to have nothing to do with location, bringing location into it, or you know, verticals that have a lot to do with location, bringing in other data sources and trying to merge, you know, geo with OLAP. So I mean, it's definitely picked up, and people are starting to think about it a lot more. And it's being driven. I mean, it's always driven by the data, right? Like, the more prevalent geo data becomes, right, you know, the more opportunities for association to other data sources. So, you know, it's definitely starting to pick up, but I've been waiting for a while.
So I kind of want to take us back here just a minute. So you mentioned, you know, our other founder, Amit, bringing you into the military project he was working on when you kind of got burnt out on the trading stuff. Just kind of curious as to how you guys met in general. I mean, I know you guys went to school together. I believe I've heard Amit say something about, like, he used to play Madden with one of your friends or something. But, like, can you say what's the full genesis? How'd you guys meet? And, yeah.
I mean, I kind of knew him in college. But, yeah, we had a mutual friend. I mean, I didn't really get to know Amit until I started working with him. But, yeah, I mean, we were kind of like, you know, we knew of each other, you know. Every now and then, you know, we'd see each other at a, you know, common get together or whatever. But yeah, it was just through a mutual friend, basically. Nothing special.
No fun story. You don't have a fun story for me?
No, don't have a fun story. But, you know, definitely props to him for, you know, doing that hard work in the beginning of getting into, you know, that program and. You know, he had a lot of that geospatial expertise. Like, the whole visualization idea was his idea. I thought it was just not a great idea. I was like, who wants to?
That's funny.
And so where do you see that stuff evolving to? So, you know, the it seems like there's entry points around like fast OLAP and advanced analytics. There's the entry point of just doing geospatial visualization of your data and being able to kind of find that needle in the haystack. Where do you see it heading in terms of the opportunity and kind of the next evolution of where this goes?
Well, I mean, I think, like, you know, if you took each vertical, you know, around geo, around ML, around OLAP, right, and tied it to, like, let's just take visualization. I mean, I think it's going to go a lot further and a lot more creatively than we think. But it's all going to be driven really not by the, like, people like me, but more by, you know, the next guy that makes the next Tableau, right? Like, where we get much more creative with the visualization, right? Or, you know, in the context of visualization, right, just in that context, you have to be able to merge all these processing capabilities, right, and also be able to think of visualizations that just aren't, like, if it's just a chart, right, then you're just bringing back a small data structure. But if it's like what I'm calling it for lack of a better term, you know, a high fidelity visualization where I can meaningfully use billions of data points. That's, and you need that to be instantaneous. That's something that we're trying to focus on. And right now there's only a handful of visualizations that I can tell you, you know, are you know, off the top of my head that are go-tos for that kind of categorization. But, you know, and the people who have thought of them are not us, but like our customers, right? So, you know, I think in the 2D space, it's going to get hot, much hotter and much more prevalent as people start to get creative. And then I think eventually, like, even in the 3D space, when you really are trying to do, you know, advanced understanding of complicated, you know, events or complicated scenarios, I think we'll start to get surprised about like what like 3D BI might be in five to 7 years, especially with like so much LiDAR data coming online. You know, having that mixing it with IoT and being able to kind of parse and process the world and then visualize that in a 3D space is going to be probably something that, you know, I can say it's going to be powerful, but someone's going to come along and you know, make the tool that, you know, everyone says, oh shit, I really need that.
Yep.
So, you know, as always, you guys are, I'm sure, working on the next product release. It's kind of like a never-ending cycle for you guys and the core engineering team over there. Is there anything that you are allowed to share with us that you're excited about in our upcoming release? You know, I'm not sure what you're allowed to disclose at this point, but curious as to what's getting you excited about the next release.
For the product, you know, like, we've gone from a place where, you know, we were just struggling to do SQL to now, like, you know, we can do very advanced, complicated SQL and we're extremely fast. And so, you know, we're at a place now where the expectation is to really have like a frictionless experience. I mean, to use the cliche term. And so, you know, what I'm looking forward to in 7 is really just, you know, sanding off all the rough edges, making, you know, the scaling, the operations, all that super easy, so that, you know, the real value and the things that we've, you know, worked very hard on can really shine. And, you know, there's just a lot of those things, but, you know, like tiered storage, resource management, you know, elasticity, these are all things that, you know, it's not rocket science. It's been done, obviously. But, you know, we just need to knock them all out so that, you know, the 7 experience is just another level up. And, you know, people are just like, you know, this is a database that, you know, I can get behind because it's got all the things that keep me, you know, from losing sleep, but it's also, you know, really fast. And it's also a little bit of a thought leader and bringing ideas into the mix that, you know, I might have ignored or, you know, might have just put off.
Yep. So I have a question for you about when you're talking to new companies and they're trying to understand where we fit versus other kind of database infrastructure, how do you articulate that to people? Because I think a lot of people just think like, oh, is this a replacement for my data lake or is this swapping out Hadoop or Spark? How do you actually talk about where we fit in the architecture and why?
Good question.
How we fit in the architecture and why, what is our difference as a product?
Yep.
I think our difference as a product is, you know, the level of ambition and the level of desire to create a really seamless set of capabilities that most other products are not trying to tie together. I think that's the differentiation on the product strategy side. I think from where we fit today, you know, I think it's right now I go to a lot of customers and, you know, you kind of see how they're using what we're replacing. And it's usually, you know, we're coming in and we're sitting next to a data lake, right? And it's Hive, or we're going to be coming in and complementing a data lake where, you know, they're going to keep their stuff, but they're also going to, you know, set up parallel, you know, CDC with us to kind of really, you know, show off what's not easily done. But I think, you know, where we are today is, you know, that fast OLAP engine, that fast geospatial engine for doing the kind of creative exploration and performant analytics, right? Where I mean, that's really where Hadoop has fallen flat. And even Spark, I mean, a lot of our customers, like you watch them run their Spark job and it's just like, you just wait. I mean, just to launch the Spark job, it just takes so long. I mean, so, you know, right now it's coming in and saying, hey, from a product strategy place, you know, context, we're going to be something fundamentally different. You know, and some of those things, the fundamentally different things we've got, some of them mature, like our visualization capability, right? Some of them are still kind of aspirational, and we're getting there with the ML stuff. But at the, you know, at the other, you know, flip of the coin is, this is also an engine that can do your, you know, nitty gritty, you know, business OLAP, right? So to have all that and have that level of ambition where we're not just going to stop and rest on our laurels is a fundamentally different approach than I think a lot of the other products. I mean, even, you know, within, like, let's say that your Hadoop ecosystem, where you're still, you know, you're patching together a bunch of things because the projects themselves kind of, and maybe rightfully so, they want to stay in their lane, right? Like Cassandra wants to do key lookup, right? Like Spark wants to be a job framework, right? But then you go to a big, you know, a big retailer and they're, you know, the common smack stack is, you know, drop my events into you know, Cassandra, do rollups with Spark, drop the rollups back into Cassandra. Like, you know, that's annoying as hell to do as a developer. I mean, it takes so much time. So to be a product that can come in and collapse stuff like that is a powerful thing. It's an ambitious thing. But on the downside of it, it's not easy to answer your question. Where do we fit, right? I mean, like, it's my fault because I want to fit in too many places. I don't want to, and Irina always yells at me. That's our product person. But I think, like, I don't want to lose the ambition, right? I mean, we do have to get more focused, obviously, but I think, like, the customers that love us the most are the ones that are doing all of it, right? They're using the visualization, they're using Geo, they're using OLAP. And they're all like, they love the ambitiousness because, you know, they see it and what, like, you can do with a single product that's really trying to do all of it. But it's not clear to me that, you know, where we fit in the stack, because you could fit us in a lot of different places, right? You could fit us in as your fast OLAP, you could fit us in as your geo engine, we've had some customers that are saying, you know, we're using Hadoop and Spark to run SQL reports. We don't need it anymore because we're going to be using you guys, right? I mean, so I think that's actually, you know, one of our challenges is figuring out, like, what do we want to recommend where we fit the best, or do we just try to keep getting so good that, you know, it's not a question of, you know, where we fit, but, you know, just like, where do we not fit, or, you know, what could we not replace? I mean,
what do you need, right? And it's kind of, it's like, where we fit tends to be very use case driven, right? So it just kind of depends.
Like I said, I think, like, the number one thing to remember is, like, I think, like, data gravity is a real thing, and that means that the database is going to go through, like, a golden era. I mean, I think we're going to go through a kind of like a shakeout, probably. I mean, there's a lot of databases out there and database companies, but I think, you know, the data drives everything. And so as that continues to exponentially increase and people get more creative around, you know, trying to build applications that fundamentally need to be close to the data, it's going to go, the database, you know, could be like the new operating system. I mean, it could be like 1984 and, you know, this is the operating system races again.
Right.
We're not quite there yet.
Yeah, that's when I shine, back in 1984. Back with a mullet. I hear you though. So what I hear you saying is that there's kind of the on-ramps, like the use cases that people on-ramp to us, and then there's kind of the overarching vision of what we're trying to achieve, and this whole piece of accelerated analytics, where you're converging AI, BI, doing advanced OLAP, all that kind of stuff. That's an ambitious vision, but what I'm also hearing is the types of use cases people are onboarding with us are fast OLAP, advanced analytics,
geospatial
and location-based visualization, the idea of looking at 20 billion rows and being able to instantaneously visualize it and look for that needle in a haystack. And then the ML piece is now taking things like TensorFlow and starting to blend it into our platform, and that you're saying is going to evolve and get richer over time.
Yeah, I mean, it's all those things, but it's also just like, it's if you think about the job of like a developer who's doing this stuff, like it's just such a pain in the ass to like deal with a lot of different solutions out there that like all I want to do is ingest my data, create a view, and then, you know, do key lookup. Like doing that at scale is just, it's just a huge effort for a developer. And like, you know, hopefully the CIOs of the world start to realize like that it's not, from a TCO perspective, even close to worth it. And, you know, databases like ourselves can kind of, you know, flourish from that realization industry wide, because if you can just make that easy, like some, you know, something like real-time inventory can go from, you know, being a, you know, a 1 year effort to, you know, a 3 month effort, right? Like most of the time, you know, for things at scale, the time is being spent on data management and data processing.
Yep. So the getting rid of the duct tape architecture and the brittleness of piecing it all together.
Right.
Yep. So I know we're coming to the end of the podcast. I have some interesting questions that aren't data related. I'm guessing you may as well.
Well, no, I think I'll let you, you know, hold the reins on this one, but yeah, let's back it out of the tech. Daniel likes to kind of end these podcasts with a few zingers, so I'll let you do your thing.
I wouldn't call it a zinger as much as a you know, and this one's going to require people to look at the picture of Mark, Nima, and I in the podcast. But Nima, the interesting thing when I've joined here, when people describe you when you're not around, they often say he's our CTO that has a little bit of a Jim Morrison vibe. I see with the glasses maybe Jim Morrison and John Lennon. But any comments on that? Have you heard that before? Do you take pride in that?
I don't take pride in it because I'm balding and these days are numbered. But I don't think I'm as cool. I'm not nearly as cool as those guys. But I can, like someone said, I looked like Frank Zappa's son yesterday or last week, and the dude's name is like Drizzle. Like Weasel or Dree, I don't know what his name is, but
or something like that. Yeah. We'll have to put that in the show notes.
Daniel pretending like he doesn't know. He's like, oh yeah, Drizzle Zappa, something
Dweezil,
like that. Yeah.
Dweezil?
Is that, you know that person?
I know of Frank Zappa's son because he's also a musician. I think he has some popular music.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I have no idea, but yeah, I mean, it's a nice thing to say. But yeah, I mean, my dad tells me my long hair is only like, accelerating my hair loss, so you know.
Is it GPU accelerating? You know, maybe.
I'm losing multiple fronts. Many cores of hair loss. All.
Okay, you good? I'm good on that one.
I'm good.
So with that, Nima, thank you.
All right, guys.
And this concludes our latest episode of Telekinesis. Data to Data Conversations. Thank you all for listening.
Yeah, right on. Thanks again, Nima. Okay.